read this verbatim for the recording. Today is Thursday, May 16th, 2019, and the time is 9:02. And we'll begin with meeting for the Regional Growth Committee at Wasatch Front Regional Council. I'd like to excuse Mayor Ramsey, who is typically our chair. I'm Tina Cannon, Morgan County Council, and vice chair of this committee. So we welcome everybody out. We'd like to start by doing introductions and go around the room. Let's start with introducing.
I'm Ryan. Ryan back filling in for Robert Pro.
Clara Hanson, UTA Planning.
Ryan, West Jordan City.
Erin Mendenhall, Utah Air Quality Board.
Mr. Stan Summers, Bishop, Warren Jess.
Beth Holbrook, UTA.
And Alton, Wasatch Front Regional Council, and the staff lead for the regional group.
Andrew Gruber, WFRC.
Daniel Thomas, Tulare County Commissioner.
Dave McCall, Tulare City.
Andrea Olson, UDOT Planning.
Reviewing University of Utah.
Will Summer, Marsalva County, representing Utah Association of Counties.
Brad Wilkinson, I am here representing the Utah chapter of the Urban Land.
Bob Dandoy, I'm with Roy City.
Katie Jordan, Wasatch Front Staff.
Nicole Crew, WFRC Staff.
Mary Pratt, WFRC Staff.
Did we get everyone? That's awesome. Thank you, everyone. All right, so we'll jump right into this. Has everyone had a chance to review the minutes from our last meeting? If so, I will entertain a motion. We have a motion by Kendall Thomas, Tulare County Commissioner, to approve the minutes from March 21st, 2019. We have a second by Councilmember Dave McCall, Tulare City. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Hearing none, we will approve those minutes. All right, so at this point, we have an opportunity for public comment. Is there anyone?
I'd like to comment on item
Could you join us at the microphone?
And it comes up after the
Can we do that now and take during the public comment period? Could you state your name in the microphone for the minutes, please?
Yes, I'm Roger Borgen. I'm co-chair of Utahns for Better Transportation. And I thank you for the opportunity to address this Regional Growth Committee on this important issue of adopting the 2019-2050 Regional Transportation Plan that represents an investment strategy for our future moving forward.
You just have this
As co-chair one. Of UBET, we have submitted comments to Wasatch Front in November of 2018. In March of 2019 on the draft.
No, we just have
the
start over there.
I want to thank Jory and Julie and others for providing me with a printed copy of the draft in February, because I guess I'm still old school.
Six people that came in since.
Being the transportation nerd that I am, I read all 100 pages looking for a paradigm shift with how how we are thinking about and investing in mobility options for our future. The principles I was looking for were set forth in the Wasatch Front Regional Council and Envision Utah-sponsored Broke Choices study some years ago that developed the Mountain View Corridor Project in Salt Lake that adopted a phased shared solution that involved road, transit, and active transportation with a trail development on a balanced transportation investment with the principle that is clearly spelled out, and I quote, the sequencing of transportation investments should be studied to recommend the most effective and cost-efficient way to meet future travel needs, reduce the rate of growth of vehicle miles traveled, and improve air quality through a better balance between auto, transit, and walk and bike trips, unquote. I researched the RTP for such a practice moving forward, but was greatly disappointed in my search. Indeed, if you reference the key recommendations section in the executive summary, you only have to go to page 10, you will see that roadway projects have an estimated $18.4 billion in 2019 dollars, and transit had a rather amazing statement. That is, I quote, it is estimated that there will not be available revenues to construct an additional 15 needed transit projects costing approximately $2.3 billion to construct by the year 2050. Quite a projection that we won't have money, that we won't wake up. Roughly 89% for roads, most of it capacity for single occupant vehicles, 9% for transit, and 2% for active transportation. Most of the capital projects for transit and bikeways go unfunded. The other search I was disappointed in is the metrics used to define success. There is very little analysis on the two key variables I believe underlie the balanced transportation outcome, the rate of growth of vehicle miles traveled, the BMT, and the percentage of travel mode share, especially at peak travel times. Instead, the RTP analyzes peak vehicle hours of travel, VHT, which is the symptom of too much BMT at peak travel times. Too much VMT is the cause, VHT is the symptom. I believe with the demographic and technological changes in the air and the growth we are experiencing, we must have a more balanced transportation investment strategy for a positive mobility outcome. Jason Davis, David, Deputy Director, one of the two Deputy Directors of UDOT, said this month, without construction improvements, we will eventually get bogged down. We become California. I would counter that because we are focusing our investments on accommodating the prediction that SOV, single occupant vehicle trips, will grow, we will be headed to the congestion, pollution, and delay that California experiences in its auto-oriented communities, rather than investing in first-class transit and active transportation options for our future. Two more points. Lastly, I'd like to highlight two projects. First, the highly valued and wise shared solution investment UDOT made in the Legacy Parkway that included a quiet, slower speed, lower stress roadway and well-used legacy multi-use trail, nature preserve, and the initiation of our regional rail front run. Parkway does not allow large semi and tanker trucks and offers a choice for passenger cars to have a safer, more fuel-efficient, less polluting way home. Parkway investment should be amortized by continuing the large truck ban and enhancements that have been made that have made it the first segment of the Great Salt Lake Scenic Byway. Second and lastly, this is the express-type bus project on 5600 West as part of a phased investment
in the Mountain View corridor I mentioned earlier. UBET and other stakeholders worked with UDOT and UTA over the past few years to redefine Phase 1 transit components to a curbside running express bus running a dedicated shoulder lane with two travel times with shelters, benches, and digital readout board, reader board showing the next bus arrival times at the stops. This would provide the start of a first-class transit system for the west side of Salt Lake County that needs and deserves it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Roger. I appreciate your comments. We will address these specifically more in depth when we reach that agenda item. Anyone else who would like to give public comment? Do you have anyone on the phone who's called in who would like to give public comment? Hearing none, we'll move forward in our agenda. That leads us to action item Wasatch Choice Vision 2019 through 2050 Regional Transportation Plan. This regional transportation plan is adopted every 4 years. This is a long process, as was mentioned in the comments earlier, and as we've discussed this has been going on for a very, very long time. I've watched this process from the sidelines, from the table, and now from this position, and I appreciate deeply the work of staff and the collaborative effort of those who have been on the ground in all of the different areas that Wasatch Front Regional represents for this plan. The Regional Growth Committee has been the steering committee for this project, and we've received input all the way along. Would you like to address some of that, Andrew, as staff?
Are you talking about addressing Roger's comments now? I'd be happy to if you'd like. I can just make a brief comment, and I know you're going to turn to Jory to present the plan. This will be really quick, because I think we're going to get at some of Roger's good points in the presentation. I just first want to note, Roger personally and then his team at Utahns for Better Transportation has been just about the most dedicated, engaged participant for decades in helping our region think about how we want to grow and the mix of transportation and how that relates to land use. And so we thank him sincerely for all that partnership and work. Roger identified an imbalance that he sees in the investments that the plan projects happening over the decades to come, principally not enough transit investments. And I would just note that I don't think we're going out on a limb here to say that we agree with that. In fact, the plan identifies that there should be more transit investments in addition to road and active transportation, biking investments. But the plan, as Jory will explain, is also financially constrained. It's based on the revenues that we reasonably anticipate will be available in the future. And so we identify needs, but then we can't fund all of those needs. And so Roger is, I think, pointing out a really important point that you all can pay attention to when Jory talks about this, which is what do we need and what do we actually have resources to pay for. He raised a few other more detailed points about the MT versus the HT. There are a variety of ways to look at this. We had spirited discussions about this as well. And I think Jory and Julie may talk some about these metrics for success, but thank you.
Thank you, Andrew. Jory, we will turn the time over to you, and after Jory's presentation, we will be asked to make a motion on this item.
Thank you very much. So, this is a monumental stage of our regional transportation plan. We have been working on the Wasatch Choice 2050 vision and the 2019 to 2050 regional transportation plan over the last 4 years. And I'd like to personally thank everybody around the table and in the room. As I look out, I think everybody in this room, I'm sure everybody in the room has participated in one way or another at an individual one-on-one meeting, one of our workshops, emails, getting on the interactive maps. And so I really, really appreciate your help throughout this process. So overview of our process, just want to remind you where we came from, what we've worked on over the last 4 years. Want to walk you through our website, so how you can review the plan, look at the document that Roger had mentioned, discuss with you a little bit why the plan is important, what are some of the performances that we get from the plan, some implementation strategies or programs that can help implement the plan once this is adopted, hopefully next week at the regional council meeting, and then obviously ask you for a motion to the council, and then we have a couple next steps after that. So with that, reminder, Wasatch Choice 2050 vision, it's a three-legged stool between economic development, land use, and long-range regional transportation plan projects, transportation projects. We have the comprehensive economic development strategies that will be updated and passed next Monday with Scott Hess leading that group with the Economic Development District. We work very closely with you on our land use planning, and that feeds into the Wasatch Choice 2050 vision. And we have our transportation and land use connection program to help assist with that. And then the regional transportation plan, which is what this item is mostly focused on and we're working on. So, some basic plan requirements. So, what do we have to do? These are the minimums, right? So, if all said and done, this is what we have to do. We have to update it every 4 years. We have to look at a minimum of 20 years. So, this plan looks out 31 years, so after 2050. It's regionally based, and it's developed on goals. And we're giving federal goals, but we take those federal goals, we work with UDOT UTA goals, and we work with local communities to develop the Wasatch Choice 2050 visions goals. And so the plan is developed with that, and the plan as a blueprint. It has to be financially constrained, as Andrew was mentioning. It's not a needs list of projects, although we do have all the projects that we believe are needed by 2050. Eventually, what makes it into the finally adopted plan are the financially constrained projects. It developed with input from partners and stakeholders, local communities, which you'll see as a theme throughout this entire presentation, that we relied heavily on everyone in this room and partners outside of the area to help develop the plan. It has to meet air quality conformance. So we receive a budget of pollutants for mobile sources. And so this plan has to make sure that it doesn't exceed those in the future. And then obviously, it's not set in stone. So we have a process where we can amend the plan over the next 4 years. If circumstances change, needs change, additional funding is available, we're able to adjust the plan. Nothing's set, and you have to wait 4 years for the next opportunity to make some changes. The Wasatch Choice 2050 goals. So we, as I mentioned, started with a group, and it was a really interesting process where we looked at the UDOT goals, we looked at the UTA strategies and goals, we looked at the federal planning factors, and we went out to local communities in one of our first workshops and asked you what was important. Those helped develop these plans and regional goals that are now were used, and they were adopted by the council in October of 2018. And we utilize these goals throughout the entire regional transportation planning process. And I'll get into a little bit more detail on that process. But also know that these 10 goals aren't just used for the regional transportation plan. They're used throughout all the programs within the Wasatch Foot Regional Council, the Transportation Land Use Connection, the TIP, the Transportation Improvement Program, our SEDS program. And so pretty much anything that comes out of Wasatch Foot Regional Council references these in some way or form. So our four-year planning process right here. We started off in the first 2 years exploring options. If you remember, if you were here 4 years ago, we rolled out blank maps. We provided you with some background data. We had you roll out tape, throw some dots on the map where you thought center should be developed. Mayor, I believe you were a county or city council member at the time, in Roy. And it was a really fun exercise. And what we did with that is develop three regional scenarios. We evaluated those scenarios against the goals, and we asked for your input on what scenario, what were your preferences, where the land use and transportation really made sense for your community and your adjacent communities in the workshop. So we held four rounds of workshops in small areas throughout the region. And it really was a nice, intimate feeling. You were able to see what your adjacent communities were doing. We invited elected officials, plenty of city staff, city council, planning commission. I believe, Roger, you were able to attend. Some of our partners and stakeholders were able to attend, along with We did this in consultation with UDOT and UTA. So it was a really great process. The second component of this was we were able to choose, right? So out of those three scenarios, we looked for your help on choosing a preferred scenario. And so what happened at the end of that, we had the regional council about a year ago endorse the vision, which was a preferred scenario of regional centers and regional transportation projects, road transit, active transportation, that then gave us the kind of license to move forward in the next step, which was to prioritize those projects. And so we used the 10 goals to evaluate all the road projects against each other, all the transit projects against each other, and score them between 0 and 100, and identify priorities. Now, it wasn't just the score that moved a project into a phase. It was also local input, feedback from our transportation partners, UDOT and UTA, and the public. So that's where we are. We've finalized those. We have impacts and benefits. We looked at how they affect the wetlands, how they affect parks, your community, things like that. And again, throughout this whole process, we had various stakeholder open houses. A couple times we sat with our transportation partners at the Front Runner stations in Ogden and Salt Lake City, taking input from people that they came off the trains. But it was a really fun day, although it was a little toasty in July, I believe. So with that, the engagement. I think I've covered that a little bit on how much we've engaged. We have performance measures, and so we have one of the, I'd say, top planners in the state, Julie Wernstad, who will be presenting next, right? So no pressure. She really took the performance measures with our analytics team and other WFRC staff on how well, and it provided you with data on how well these scenarios or projects performed throughout the region, what kind of impact they had. It was coordinated with land use and transportation. I can't overemphasize that this plan did that more than any other plan we've done before. Before we have the Wasatch Choice 2040 vision, we look at the projects and how it worked with that, but this time we really integrated those two, and it really affected project decisions, where the centers went, and that was what we covered during most of those workshops. We identified new centers and the timing, right? So this was the first time that we went and asked you, when do you think your center within this Wasatch Choice 2050 vision will be come on board? Well, do you think it's in the first 10 years? Do you think it'll be the second 10 or the third? And what that did, I'll jump to this one, is it fed into our real estate market model and really helped feedback between that and our travel demand model and impacted the projections of ridership or volumes on our facilities. We utilized our GIS and interactive map. We have a great analytics team. This is where we took hundreds and hundreds of comments. We had all the projects available throughout this process available on our website, and as we went through the process, you were able to preview these. It wasn't just a come to the meeting and that was the last time you saw the projects. You were able to reference those in future times. And this was the first time that we phased bicycle projects. In the past, we've had a map with regional bicycle facilities, and this go around, both Scott Hess and View, Cube, and Wagon, helped us phase the bicycle projects within the region based on needs for those. And there's Val. So Val and I have been talking. Val has done this is his seventh regional transportation plan, my sixth, and this is by far the best plan. And it's because we did all this outreach, we engaged more, we took more comments, we really looked at the tie between regional centers and the land use, the economic development component, working with our transportation partners. I'm pretty sure I could have had an office at next to Laura's at UTA at times, or at UDOT. We work very closely with them, sometimes on a weekly basis. Financial constraint, Andrew touched a little bit on this. We never have enough funding for our needs, right? And it doesn't just
We will never.
And this isn't the only item, right? You as local communities, I don't think have money for every need that comes to your community, be it sewer, infrastructure, parks, you name it, right? So we're limited on our resources. We do have a unified financial model that we work on a statewide basis with UDOT, the three other MPOs in the state at UTA, and we develop growth rates on the projects, on the funding sourcing. These existing funding sources, we have growth rates. We also have the prioritization process, which I talked about before, that reference the goals. And so we have to balance those needs. And last but not least, we work with you throughout this process on identifying new funding sources that could potentially be used in the future or an equivalent, right? There's a lot of talk right now about road usage charges, you know, as more electric vehicles come on board, things like that. And so we do have the financially constrained plan broken into phases, and if you I'll show you, but we have identified the projects by need and then also by financially constrained. And what happens is, if we have more need in phase one and it bumps to phase two, it bumps to phase three, and then we have the unfunded projects at the end that are still needed, but we're just not showing enough revenue for. And I think, Roger, you highlighted some of those unmet needs in your comments. So what does that mean? Here are some project highlights, which I think are really, really interesting. We have almost 400 road projects at about just 950 miles worth. We have 111 needed transit projects, 834, and 633 active transportation biking projects at about 1,000 miles. So it's about a one-third, one-third, one-third on number of miles of transportation projects between those three modes. The cost is a little different, right? It costs a little bit less or a lot less to build a bicycle facility than it is a freeway or update the front runner system. But the one interesting thing that I'd like to note, and I think this is kind of highlights the way our region's growing, right? We've been growing out, but in the next 30 years, we're gonna start growing up. And so it's a 60-40 ratio between road needs and transit needs, which if I look back in the last four or five plans, I don't think that it's been ever that close to almost a 50-50, but it's a 60-40 need between transit and roads. Roger, you highlighted perfectly what I was going to mention, is that we do have a lot of existing funding sources for roadways, but we do not for transit. So you can see that the gap of unmet need between roads is near $3 million, or $3 billion. But for transit, it's just shy of $7 billion. We didn't financially constrain active transportation. I think that'll be something we'll look at doing in this next upcoming plan. But we have about $500 million of active transportation projects. And a lot of those projects are on road, would get built with these other roadway improvements. And so that's why the cost is at that level. Last to note is we have about 275 regional centers throughout the area, throughout the region. And these came from your input, right? Neighborhood centers, urban centers, metropolitan centers. So spread out throughout the region with that. Are there any questions on those? If not, I'm going to show you how you can access, look at all the projects. I'm going to walk you through the website, and then we'll go back into the presentation.
I have a question. With some flexibility in funding, could you have provided a better balance between highways and transit? I know you're financially constrained, and it's a requirement of federal law, but my impression from the book that I think was shared with you, Best Practices Metropolitan Transportation Planning, is that these, you referred to California, or someone did, California regions and how they're spending money. In many cases, they're spending, even though the mode shares are much lower for transit than they are for roads, they're spending as much money on transit as on roads. Could you, subject to your financial constraint, achieved a better balance, which is, I think, what Roger was referring to between transit and the highways. And it's a difficult thing because you know your transit mode share in this region, as I recall, is something like 3%, and the mode share for highways, auto and highways, something, you know, around 90%, as I recall. But but still, looking to the future, we know that if we spend money on highways, particularly capacity projects, we induce additional traffic. There's no question about that. It's been studied for decades, and that in time those highway projects fill up with cars as people drive farther and more often. So I'm just wondering if you could have added better balance, subject to your financial constraint, than you did.
Yes, I you're spot on. If we had one pot of money to work with, the layout might be a little bit different on the funding and where the allocation went. Unfortunately, right now, most of the funding's what I'd say siloed, right? It's specified for a specific mode. That's changing. So just recently, the Transportation Investment Fund has been opened up to active transportation type projects. The state's putting money towards the Transit Transportation Investment Fund, but they're still siloed a little bit. There are some funding sources. The most recent local option sales taxes are more flexible and can be spent by the counties and the cities for a variety of different modes, but the large pot, even the money we get from federal highways or FTA are specific for those modes. Those don't come into the state, and then we as a region get to make the decision on where that funding goes. So I think it's moving in that direction, and I think Andrew and others are working with the legislature and working to help that the future local option sales taxes and even some of the funding sources from the state become more flexible. But right now, we have to use reasonable assumptions, and we have to have a base of here's what they are right now, and we don't have an indication that they're going to change on a certain date or anything like that. And so that's part of the reason why we update our plan every 4 years, because if those do change, then we can make modifications to the plans to reflect those. And you had,
well, I just wanted to note that there's general acknowledgement that the more flexible funding sources are, the more we all are able to allocate those towards the highest needs. And also, the more those are flexible, the more we have a challenging and interesting conversation that we would have to have about, okay, so which are those highest needs? And I just wanted to note that that would really be something that we would need direction from council. That's not a staff-driven decision.
Could I also, you talked about performance measures, and I commend you on the fact that you now have 10 performance measures rather than focusing so much on congestion relief. So that's really good. On Roger's point, VMT versus EHT, and this is sort of obscure, but one is vehicle miles traveled and the other is vehicle hours of travel. And going back 20 years, I was advocating VHT, don't anymore. I think he's right that VMT, vehicle miles traveled, is the best single measure we have of whether land use and transportation are integrated. If you have compact development and transit and active transportation, you reduce VMT. So I think in the future, I've mentioned this before, that that if you invest in roads, you create more VMT, maybe not more VHT, but more VMT. And I would like to see the WFRC consider VMT in the future as a principal performance measure. It does if you invest in roads, you every 10% increase in road capacity leads to about a 7% increase in VMT within the first 10 years. And unless you're measuring that, you don't know that that's going to be the effect. So I'd love to see a shift in the future toward VMT, or add it. If you want to have 11 measures, that's fine. But don't ignore it.
Sure, can I jump in?
Thanks, Jura. I appreciate all the work that's gone into this, and I want to say that I appreciate the legislative ongoing conversation that the staff has and in any ways that we can support as cities, counties, and commissioners. I'm on page 30. If anybody has the plan open, for page 30 of 150 has a really interesting chart. It's wonderful to have.
You know what? I mean, this feeds kind of into my presentation.
So I'm looking at the clean air line there and see that the current path to 2050 puts us at 7.9 million vehicle trips to take in the region per day.
Okay, you sure got that? Thanks.
But while you're getting there, I'll ask the question, which is, how does the plan contemplate the potential for a double decking of I-15? And that capacity question seems that it will come up in the years, the 31 years we have between now and 2050. And yeah, that's the one. I don't know if you can zoom in at all, but I'm looking at that clean air line down there where we're at 5.3 million trips taken in the region per day today, and we're looking at the same number of trips, whether we implement Wasatch Choice or we don't. So I guess I'd like you to reflect on that stagnant number and also how the capacity issue of I-15 is contemplated in the plan.
Jory, I can weigh in on that if that's helpful. The issue of how people move in the I-15 and Front Runner corridor is one of the biggest issues that our region is facing. The travel demands on that corridor are extremely high, and honestly, the ability, part of the idea why people have been talking about double decking is, to state the obvious, it's very difficult to widen I-15. And if you did widen I-15, there's a question about even how effective that would be, because, anyway, because the more lanes the you have, the reduction of the efficiency of an individual lane. So what happened was UDOT, UTA, Wasatch Urban Council, and MAG knew that this was a very sticky and challenging question, so we came together in the very early stages of the regional transportation plan and did a more in-depth study, and that was called the Wasatch Front Central Corridor Study. And we looked at a whole host of different potential solutions across modes, including double decking I-15. And just for brevity, that particular solution was not very effective at all, cost effectiveness, the amount of money that you would spend for the benefit that you would get. And that's setting aside some tricky cost of quality of life questions, like, well, what does that do to views and to our conception of our region? But just on travel efficiency for cost, it was one of the worst performing options. And so as a collective group, we came to the decision that that's not the path of this transportation plan. That could come up, and you know, we revisit these things on occasion, but after going in depth and really looking at the pros and cons of different solutions, that was not one of the winning options, just to be frank.
And that's what I understood from what the information I've had and what I've looked into. And yet I look at UDOT's 2040 projections for long-range truck traffic. It's over 130% growth. The short-range truck traffic's over 70% growth by 2040, not 50. And the reality of our shifting marketplace from brick and mortar to online sales is we're all driving up not just our own trips, but the truck traffic as the crossroads of the West. And I think the changes we're going to see by 2050 in terms of major commuting and interstate commuting is really significant, and the air quality costs of those impacts are humongous. And you know, Salt Lake City Council, and I'll say that the inland port conversation plays into this, that how we get our goods here is part of our regional considerations for sure. And I know that those UDOT projections aren't contemplating a rail scenario of bringing goods in and out of the valley. I don't believe that that 2040 projection is, but I think it's something for this body to consider, and I'm probably going beyond the RTP at this point, but as we go forward, these kind of considerations of how do we get goods in and out, and how does that impact UDOT's projections, and how does that play into what I don't think is necessarily, I don't feel like there's a bow tied on that, there is no double decking conversation. And I'll just, I guess, finish up by saying that I would love to see an outcomes-oriented conversation going forward, much like Professor Ewing is suggesting, that aligning with UTA and the potential for us to focus our local investments, getting back to the legislative conversation about how do we use the dollars, it's going to take a lot for us to move people into transit the way that we need to move people into transit. And I don't see that we have that aggressive of funding yet. And I would like us to see an alignment of UDOT and UTA outcomes as it relates to air quality, but really it's a quality of life, and that's what we're here to do with the RTP. Thanks,
Erin. I'd like to kind of bring that in as those of us who are in shoulder counties with Fox Elder and with Twillet and with Morgan County, one of the reasons, the good point part about being part of Wasatch from Regional Council, even though these issues are not ours, we are seeing that spill out the same way. And it's been a great opportunity for me to sit on so many of the different Wasatch from Regional Council commissions, because these are the type of conversations for how do you relieve that kind of congestion and eliminate the need to go double-decker if we are pushing out and we are having economic development discussions in the shoulder counties so that you're not getting, as in my case, 86% of my workforce commuting to the Wasatch Front. This is an overlying plan for how you bring these type of different solutions in completely different ways that are not necessarily all focused on increasing the roads, because that increases all of the negative of increasing your traffic. So this is a broad conversation. It's covering multiple items. That's why it's great to have the conversation with the Economic Development District and how we plan for a future that is different, that is still taking into consideration the quality of life. It has also been fantastic to see, as the conversation is changing at the legislature and we're getting different requirements for where transportation dollars are spent, that there is flexibility to the plan. And I think we should keep that in mind, that while we are adopting or being asked to adopt a plan today, there is a way to amend this plan as those conversations continue and as we start seeing different, perhaps better options for how we could be focusing those dollars. So keep that in mind. I'd like to turn the time back over to Joris to finish your presentation.
I appreciate those comments, and you're right. We're looking for adopting of the 2019 plan. I continually think about the 2023 plan and what kind of enhancements and what do we want to dive into and look at further that we didn't look at in this plan. And so your comments today definitely will feed into that conversation, and I'm sure we'll be reaching out to you as local community stakeholders, partners, on enhancing the next plan, right? How do you get to the document, right? Or how would you look at all those projects, the 1,000-plus projects within our regional transportation plan? So you go to the WFRC website, click on Visions and Plans, you hover down to RTP, Regional Transportation Plan, and right now it says In Progress. In a couple weeks, that'll change to the Adopted 2019 plan, right? If you click on that, it brings you to our landing page for the regional transportation plans. Here you'll find the actual document that Roger's read, and you all have the assignment to read this by next Thursday council meeting. And then an interactive map. Also, within this website, you may be even more familiar with is this infographic up here on the right that we utilize as we've developed the regional transportation plans. If you recall, one of the first sections was, let's evaluate or explore scenarios. Well, you were able to click on this 3 years ago, click on that icon, an interactive map showed up. So if you ever want to look back and think, did they look at that in one of the scenarios? You can look at that here, and that interactive map is still up. You can see what we reviewed 3 or 4 years ago or throughout the process. We also do have all the comments that we received through the entire 4-year process. They'll be online, available in a spreadsheet that you can scroll through and look at. What I want to focus a little bit on is how you can look at a project within your region. So if you click on the interactive map here, it'll load up. And this new interactive map has some really, really cool features. I can't express enough appreciation for our analytics team on focusing on this and making it really user-friendly. So when it opens up, you've got all the projects on road transit, active transportation, and all three phases, and unfunded, so four phases virtually, and centers. So if you click up over here at the right screen, a legend will pop up. And say, Mayor Dando, I'm going to look at Roy. So I want to zoom into Roy here. And Riverdale, you guys are sitting next to each other. And you want to look at, we'll say road projects. I know 5600 South is an important project that we're working with UDOT on right now. You can click on that, you can click it off, right? So you can just clean up the screen a little bit if you want to just specifically look at that. If you just want to see projects that are in a phase, you can click those off and see what projects are only in phase one in the first 10 years of our plan. You can also click the centers on and off. And so what you can then do is click on a project, and it'll update the information over here. So it'll tell you the extent of that project, when the project was needed. So here it says needed in phase one, it's financially constrained in phase one, an estimated cost of today's dollars, and then an estimated cost of the middle of the phase. So this project is near $80 million. By the time the middle of 2025, say, it's about $100 million. You can also see if it's a UDOT-owned facility or if it's a locally-owned facility. You can see if it's widening from one lane. That would be for a road project. You can do the same for the transit or the active transportation type projects. One of my most favorite things of this, say you're looking at this project and you want to share it with your city council or use this screen right here. You can now click up here in the address bar, and that will save these features. So you can copy paste this, send it to them. When they open it back up, so I'll do that right now. Copy, open up a new window, paste it, hit return. Takes a second, it might trick you, it'll think out, and then it'll zoom in on the project. Wait for it.
Don't touch anything.
If you want an autographed copy, Andrew's signing in the back of the office. So, any questions on the internet, on the website or interactive maps? I promise that feature doesn't work. Transportation improvement program, but the region still grows, that goes down. So obviously congestion happens, and you can only access 130,000 of those jobs via car. You can access a little bit more from transit because it's in its own right of way. You can utilize the track system. If we do the Wasatch Choice Path to 2050, that goes up to 226,000 jobs via car and about 60,000, just under 60,000 for the transit system. So, Ed, you want to try
to recall? Well, can I just note that, because you highlighted if we build, and I'm just noting that when we talk about Wasatch Choice, it is construction of needed transportation projects physically constrained. It's also how do we integrate communities' visions with those kinds of projects so that we're doing a nice job of tying those things together, which helps reduce travel demands and improve destination accessibility and all those kinds of things that help us meet our needs. And so when we look at that Wasatch Choice Path to 2050, every time Jory talks about it, it's the story of all of those pieces coming together, not just the transportation funding.
I appreciate that. I probably don't emphasize enough on the centers needing to take place. It's the whole picture, right? If only part of it gets implemented, then these numbers are different, right?
So if you thought about the vertical integration of what we would do with delivery, UDOT and drones and everything, we're doing a box on their Cami with the things we're doing now to be able to get those things happening. So is this a part of that plan to be able to implement vertical integration into this?
I didn't even recognize you as a speaker.
I know. I'm sorry.
You know what? We have
already talked about this dog.
He's from
18.
Spike, I was like, 69.
Spike 150 was so last week.
We have not taken that into consideration. We are looking at innovative technologies in the future, but not a lot of great detail. I mean, we're looking at autonomous vehicles. I just saw the presentation yesterday on the drones, which kind of almost made my head explode. And I thought, how is the next plan going to incorporate some of that within it? So we haven't for this plan in a lot of detail. We have recognized that there are going to be some innovations. And that's why, again, we do this plan every 4 years, because things are moving very quickly and can change. But it also has to be based on a little bit of ground truthing. Because imagine if the plant was built in the 50s, right? I think there were promises of flying cars, and those plants would have been like, no new roads, we're just going to have flying cars. And I'm a little bummed out about the Back to the Future 2015 never happened.
Sure. I add one more thing. I think, you know, we're already thinking about the next iteration of this plan, and we work so carefully. I'm going to miss talking to you guys like every day or every week about this project until we just get started again. But
right.
The next version, I think there's this vertical integration, but one of the things that we don't really talk about in this plan yet, but I think is maybe in the next version, is policy and regulatory tools too. I think, you know, Councilmember Mendenhall's comments earlier, I mean, there's road user charges, there's congestion pricing, there's free transit fare, there's a whole variety of policy and regulatory tools that have an impact on this future as well. That's not really what this plan is about today, but there's a lot we can talk about moving forward.
Can I just say there's one more thing you probably ought to start thinking about instead of worrying about maybe suppressing those things is jumping off someplace up in Tremont. I-84, I-15 comes together right there. I'm actually looking at the road, I call it I-15B, to go across the side of the lake, hit where Tooele heads out to Wendover, come back in, and then go around the mountain and hit that end of the DeFi. I know that's a big jump for you guys, but I've been talking about it for 5 years. So instead of worrying about double decking, doing these types of things, you can take 95% of the truck traffic that actually goes through Salt Lake and off to the side, and the things that have to come into Salt Lake can actually come in. But if you can talk about, I got 17,500 trucks coming through Box Elder County every morning. I'm in a day of 67,000 cars, because everything converges right there. So that's one of the things that you have to start looking at. I mean, I'm sure I'll be dead and gone, and you know, me and Beth are going to talk about it for a while. I understand there's liquefaction, there's all these other types of things that happen on the west side. But if we don't start looking at it now, there's no way you can throw enough money at the growth that's happened in Salt Lake unless you start looking at what's going to happen in Tooele, Box Elder, Morgan, Juab, Carbon. And whether it's the things that are happening with the smoke model that we're going to try to take care of,
I was talking to Representative, probably the wrong thing, Council.
I'll take whatever.
Representative. Talking about the smoke system that's going to go on, you know, what's happening right now with the Inland Port. You know, I love Salt Lake as much as anybody else, but we are overbuilding to the point where what's going to be left. And I realize that we're going to continue to have kids and things are going to happen in that direction. But where are we going to put these things that makes the most sense? So we still have the money back that we can look at our windows and see the mountains without these things happening in front of us. And if we don't think about that now, it's going to be too late in the future. So we need to start putting this into the future plans, integrated systems, I-15B, and those type of things. So sorry to interrupt that, Jeff, to be on the line.
Come anytime you want. Really, really briefly, I love this a lot. And I just wanted to note that one of the things that, as staff, we really need and expect from Regional Growth Committee is to help us scope out what we do in the next cycle. What, you know, what did you wish we had done differently or better or in more depth in this cycle? What are the issues? And so, as we move forward in future meetings, we're going to start to unpack this and explore with you. Okay, so where do we go now? So thank you.
I appreciate that.
Let's keep rolling. All right, another performance measure is auto travel time. So right now, the average person spends just under an hour in their vehicle every day. If we don't do anything, right, growth still happens, but we don't invest in the transportation system. That jumps up almost 25 minutes to an hour and 25 minutes sitting in your seat. With this plan, and as Ted mentioned, the integration of the land use and the transportation, that dropped down to an hour and 10. So we're not saying things are going to get any better than they are today when it comes to auto travel, but it's not going to be significantly better than we can do anything in the future. For transit, that's almost a 2.5 times increase in the amount of trips per day. So right now, about 118,000 trips per day goes up to nearly over 300,000 trips per day on the transit system. And so that's the, again, that key connection and tie to those centers. That works, this works, and transit works the best with those centers and the tie to them. So moving forward. Okay, so implementation. So we have a great plan. What resources are out there to help implement this? So we have our transportation improvement program, which funds the surface transportation programs, congestion mitigation, air quality, and transportation alternatives program, right? So those are three funding sources hopefully your communities are very familiar with. We also have our transportation and land use connection. So we help fund locally land use transportation plans, active transportation plans, local community needs. So work with Megan on those if you have anything coming up or if you're looking at now this vision and you're thinking, wait a minute, I want to dive a little bit deeper into this center. We put a dot down there. We want this center to come up. Now, what do we need to do next? Work with her on those type of projects. We also have the Wasatch Front Economic Development District, which meets next Monday. Talk to Scott Hess on like coordination between the economic development and your centers and land use and transportation projects. We're also going to be doing system monitoring and management, working closely with UDOT and UTA on how to make the existing system work as best as it can, right? Try to put that as a top priority. We're ongoing visioning and updates. And so the vision isn't static. It's not going to be just a map that or a poster that we'll hand out to you and you're stuck with it for the next 4 years or 10. You know, it'll be updated and a little bit more malleable in the future. We're going to be doing ongoing performance monitoring, setting targets, using this committee to report back some of the measures and the performance of that. And we're looking at the development of new technologies. And so those are definitely coming a lot quicker than I could have imagined 5 or 10 years ago. And we've touched on a handful of those new technologies and some of the potential impact of the plan. So this comes to our the motion component of this, and I'll kick it back over to you, Councilmember.
Thank you, Jory. I appreciate Commissioner Summers' comments, and I'm sure that so does Commissioner Thomas, where we bring in, this is why it is a Wasatch Front Regional Committee. This is why it's a plan that's taking into consideration consideration what all the options are and how some of the shoulder counties can add to or take away from the impacts of what are going on in I-15. So taking into consideration that there is an amendment process, the plan is not perfect yet, although it is the best plan we've had to date. It is not yet perfect. There is an amendment process, and it is time to move on to the next iteration of this plan. I will entertain a motion.
I move that we recommend the adoption of the final plan.
Thank you. We have a motion from Councilmember Winter.
Second.
And second from Mayor Riding. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? We have one opposition in reviewing.
Thank you. Okay, so next steps, right? We'll take this plan to the Regional Council next Thursday. Two o'clock in the afternoon. I think a handful of you sat on that board as well. So this will be a lot more abbreviated presentation to them. And then what we'll do is the council approves the plan, we'll submit that to Federal Highways and Federal Transit Administration, and hopefully they'll make a recommendation on not only the regional transportation plan, but the air quality conformity memorandum that we have also. A couple additional steps beyond that. So obviously, as we've talked and alluded to a little bit today, the work never ends. We don't get to take the rest of the summer off, do we, Andrew? I don't know.
You don't, Jory.
Okay, so we're gonna work on the Wasatch Choice 2050. We're gonna work out, we started reaching out and working with some of your planners on implementation, progress measures, community visits. Ted's kind of leading that effort, but we're gonna do a lot of work. Expect a new poster in August. We're working on that. We have a really close draft right now. I believe it's an award-winning vision. The Unified Transportation Plan. We've worked on a Unified Transportation Plan for the last four plans now. This will be our fourth plan since 2007. This is an integrated plan with the three other metropolitan planning organizations, UDOT, UTA, and we collaborate on timing, financial constraints, performance measures, safety, active transportation. We'll have a new plan that'll come out in this October. A couple of the MPOs are in a little bit of different timing that will adopt it this summer. And UDOT is in charge of the rest of the state. And so Andrea Olson here, the new planning manager, planning director at the UDOT complex is leading that effort up. And that's where the Morgans, the northern parts of Box Elder County, as well as plans fall into the statewide long-range transportation plan that kind of make up the rest of the outside of the MPOs. And so that will come out this October. With that, any questions?
Can I just make a comment? Thank you so much for working as collaboratively as you have in this process with UTA. We really appreciate it. I know our staff talk regularly, and we feel like we've been really good collaborative partners on this. Thank you for that.
I appreciate it too. It's been great.
Thanks.
Can I just also briefly, I just want to express my appreciation to the WFRC staff that has worked so hard on this, along with our partners at UDOT, UTA, the cities, the counties, the members of RGC. As this discussion indicates, there are tricky issues and differing opinions on various sides of these issues, strong opinions about we should go in X direction or Y direction. And I will note something that everybody probably knows, those opinions don't always, they sometimes conflict with each other. And so part of our effort here at WFRC is to try to consider all of that and then come up with plans that are as balanced as they can be and make what I like to think of this as relentless incremental progress. That's the path. And so we welcome impatience, and we try to balance that out with all of the interests that are at play here. And again, I'll just conclude by saying thank you so much to our great team of staff at WFRC who worked so hard for years, and as Jory said, we'll continue to. So thanks, guys.
All right, Julie, we will turn the time off to you for agenda item number 5, WFRC resource and to assist growth planning.
I'm actually going to turn the time over to Andrew.
For a brief intro, yeah, we're Okay, so I'm going to just give a little intro on this and then turn back to Julie. There has been a lot of activity at the legislature in the space around transportation and housing. And how, I mean, it's a lot of what we've been talking about here actually in this discussion. How do we do the best job possible with integrating the consideration of land use and transportation and having the most effective paths forward? So two really significant bills have passed in the last 2 years. Many of you know about, have been deeply involved in. We've been up to our necks in all of this. Looney Stafford, our manager of government affairs, and others. So I'm going to hit on these real quick, and then Julie's going to talk about here's what we are doing to help you at the local level to fulfill your responsibilities under these bills. So the first one, y'all remember in 2018, Senate Bill 136. This is the bill that modified the governance structure for the UTA board. Less notice, less covered in the press about that bill, but folks here remember, it also modified the requirements for the prioritization of the way the state, principally UDOT, spends around $700 million per year in sales tax dollars on transportation projects. And what it did is it said to UDOT, hey, you should modify your criteria. Andrea's working on this now, along with others at UDOT, in collaboration with the Metropolitan Planning Organizations and other stakeholders, to look more broadly than just traditional transportation metrics, safety, congestion, and other things. Those are important, but look more broadly. Look at local land use. Look at access to jobs. Look at connections to projected major centers of economic activity and population in the future. Consider accommodating multiple modes of travel. So all of these things, they may, in a conversation like this, those things may seem like, well, of course we're going to do that. But that's not the way it works at most DOTs around the country. And with the collaboration of UDOT and very willing participation, and then legislators and others like us in this room, the state is actually really turning the direction and thinking more broadly about the relationship of its investment with land use and other modes of transportation. And at the same time, that bill created what's called the Transit Transportation Investment Fund. It still silos, as Professor Ewing was noting before, but it's for the first time it's the state actually saying, we're gonna put some money, just a little bit at first, it's gonna grow over time, into transit. So that's sort of on the transportation side. And then the next year, the legislature comes back, you go to the next slide, the legislature comes back and says, okay, we looked at transportation last year, what about the other side of that? What about at the local level and housing? So Senate Bill 34 just passed in the last legislative session. And I think, you know, there's a lot of coverage about this. There was a lot of hand-wringing because there was no money, new money included for housing in this bill, which is a bummer. But the policy changes are very, very significant. And what this bill does is it says to the local governments, cities and counties, you have to do something different in your general plans than what you have done in the past. On transportation, it says you've got to correlate the local transportation element of your plan, right? Which every community has to have a transportation element of their general plan. You have to correlate that with population and employment projections and your local land use. Seems like a very reasonable thing to do. Many communities are doing it, but it's ensuring that this happens. It also says that when you're doing your local transportation plan, you have to consider the regional transportation plans. Again, makes sense. Wasn't in law before, and now it's an expectation. Consider the impacts of what you're doing at the local level with the broader region. You also have to look now at active transportation, bikeways. That was not required in local plans before. Roads were, transit was, active transportation is now a requirement. And it also says to communities, you should plan residential and commercial development around your major transit investment corridors, like TOD, transit-oriented development, and transit stations, right? It's a great way to absorb population growth that's coming. It's not right for everybody, but for an increasing share of the population, living in a mixed-use center where you can take transit or bike or walk, needs to be more of an option in the future. And then finally, there's a lot of discussion about this. We won't call it a stick, we'll call it an encouragement. Communities have to do a moderate income housing plan. And if they don't, then they're not eligible for those TIF, the state TIF or TTIF dollars to be spent in their community. So that's a way of the legislature saying, you've got to take this seriously. Now, as local governments, you may be thinking, well, okay, how are we supposed to know what those population and employment projections are, or long-range plans, or active transportation, or major transit investment corridors? And that's where we're going to turn to Julie about the resources that we're putting together with our partners to make this, have all this information available to you. Julie.
All right. So that we've received through the development of the Wasatch Choice 2050 Vision and Regional Transportation Plan that Jory just explained, we've produced many of the necessary resources to help our communities implement the Affordable Housing Modifications Bill SB 34. And we're working to put that in a convenient package to make it easier for our communities to not only comply with state law, but also just do good planning. So we have available, or we are compiling that more digestible population and employment projections, obviously our long-range transportation plan, and then the major transit investment corridors and stations. So why is it important that we look at these growth forecasts? This is no surprise to anyone, but Utah is growing, obviously, and we need to ask ourselves, are we helping to accommodate that growth, or are we allowing that growth to occur in areas that have more significant impacts on our infrastructure, our open space, and our quality of life? Another reason to consider these growth projections is that this is the basis of the RTP. It's the basis of some other decisions, such as water and schools, and we need to make sure that we're coordinating our land use and our transportation so that our mobility investments make the impacts that we believe that they're making. So the first resource we have available is our populations and employment projections. This is the basis of the RTP, and we've compiled it up to about city level to make it easy for you guys to just take that data and use it in your moderate income housing plans and your general plans. That can be found online at our data resource, data.wprc.org. And we have forecasted data available by year from 2015 to 2050 for populations, households, total employment, and we've broken that employment down further for retail, office, industrial, and other jobs. If you're on this website, you can just search this little bar, projections, and you'll be able to get that GIS data, and there's some other information about how to use the data. The second resource that we have available for communities, since they're supposed to consider the regional transportation plan, is obviously the regional transportation plan. So if you went on to our map that Jory walked you through, you'll be able to see in more detail how our projected roadways, transit, and active transportation facilities are aligned with our plan Wasatch Choice 2050 centers and also other general land uses. Part of the regional transportation plan is new transit corridors. So the bill has asked that areas that have a major major transit investment corridor or station location plan residential and commercial development in those areas. And so not only is that on our regional transportation plan, but we've also created small area PDFs that show all of the existing and planned major transit investment corridors and also known fixed guideway transit stations. We say known because when we plan transit in the future, it's not always certain where those new station locations may go. So those are the three major resources that we have. We're going to skip over this accessibility part because we're running out of time. But we're going to come back to you and go into great detail about this. So come back, I guess, later this year, probably. Ted, you're looking like a messy. So like I said, we're making this package in an easy and convenient way. So in the next couple weeks, you'll be able to go onto our website, maps/data/general plan resources. And by city, you'll have something that looks like this. We'll provide convenient links to both the GIS and PDF data of those housing and population projections of the regional transportation plan, the major transit corridors, and also your workplace accessibility, which we'll talk to you about at a later meeting. So we'll have that plan by the 82 cities, and you'll just be able to go here one-stop shopping for all of your SB 34 needs. The other resource that we have is our planning technical assistance program, which is also one of the menu items in the bill. And that is our transportation and land use connection. This program is available to help you update your general plans. Jory mentioned a number of other things, but specifically in this context, can help you make sure that your general plan is compliant with SB 34, and also help you do your moderate income housing plans. So that resource is available. Letters of intent open out back in October. And that's also a partnership with Salt Lake County, UDOT, and UTA. Okay, that's it.
Okay, thanks, Julie. I just want to say we have been working really closely with the League of Cities and Towns, DWS, and Association of Counties to provide information. So, Julie, whip through this stuff. Those of you that are involved in any of those organizations, or ULUI, or ULI, or APA, or any of the soup of acronyms that are involved in this stuff, there's lots of opportunities for further training. If anybody's looking for something to do on Saturday morning, the League of Cities and Towns has put together a 3-hour training that's going to be simulcast all over the state. Julie's going to be presenting there. It's going to be really fun. I'm sure Mayor Ryan's going to be there, right? You don't have to answer, Mayor. This stuff is important. It gets at, we talk at the regional level, but it gets at on ground at the local community level. How are you doing your community design? And Julie was mentioning access to opportunities. You know, when you do your housing development, when you plan for where job growth is coming, and when you plan your transportation, how can you do that in a way that is maximizing the number of jobs that people get to? Where do you put your housing so that they have better access to jobs? If you're trying to attract businesses with tax incentives or otherwise, how do you do that in such a way that the business is thinking, well, we want to encourage them to locate where they have the maximum access to workers or to customers, instead of just plopping it down just sort of anywhere where then a lot of new infrastructure needs to be built. At least these tools that we want to provide will give you the opportunity to think about those things with an analytical framework. Anyway, so I think that's it for this item.
I just wanted to make a comment on that as well, if I can. One of the things that I think is such a critical component to this is the opportunity to utilize 34 with the housing component, dovetailing that with also the fact that when you're looking at your future planning and your future growth, one of the things that's going to be key from a transportation and a transit perspective is when you do what I would call the equivalent of a grid system type of a layout, that's where you're going to maximize the ability to have that connectivity between transit, certainly, but also between your housing and your work. And so when you are in that planning process as a community, when you can consider that as an opportunity, then that's going to take that to the next level so that your residents in your area can access all of these other things, all of the commercial components of your community, whether they're going to the store, all of these other things that factor into transit and transportation. So I think that this is a great opportunity. I'm sure that Julie's going to talk about this more, but I just wanted to emphasize that for all of the communities out there in the cities, because this will really be something we want to consider and encourage highly in the future.
All right, so we are going to go to our final item on our agenda. We don't have other business, I guess. We are going to do information only on large-scale project updates. Now, we're running out of time, so I need to emphasize this is a quick overview. It's rapid fire. So I'm going to turn the time over to Ted. You get 1 minute on the project.
Okay.
Barely.
Thank you, and Mike's class. So the reason she's turning it to me is I'm going to talk briefly about the report, and I'm going to invite Ryan back to chime in. I'm talking about it because I am the chair of with Wyatt McMillan of UDOT, the chair of the technical committee. Here's what's happening in this process right now. There has been a gathering of ideas and information to inform different scenarios of how the inland port might unfold. So just to be clear, no change is not a scenario. There will be change in that area. There will be, as we heard from council person member Mendenhall earlier, mayoral candidate Mendenhall, that there's a rapid growth in freight. So that's one scenario, and then there are questions about how can we maximize rail usage as opposed to truck traffic, other things Mendenhall talked about. So we're in the process of scenario development, and those will come together and be released approximately when, Ryan, and then and add anything else you want for 3.5 seconds.
Okay, 3.5 seconds. Thanks, Ted. So as Ted mentioned, we have had our first round of the meetings. Not only did we talk transportation, we talked air quality, environment, port technology, satellite groups. Next round of meetings, mid-June. We're getting them on the calendar right now. To Council Member Mendenhall's point about the freight, rail versus road, I did want to chime in there, but got cut off. We are modeling that this summer, so hopefully we have some answers. We can have some real data to point to. But to answer your question, Ted, we're looking to have those scenarios ready by the end of the summer, ready for the public and stakeholders to chime in on.
I think that'll be a great opportunity to further the dialogue around that. So,
thank you. Now we will move to the Southwest Salt Lake County Vision with Mayor Wright.
Real quickly, last summer a developer proposed a 900-acre, 30,000-person development called Olympia Health in the Southwest Waters. That got the attention of the six mayors in the Southwest Water. We formed a caucus and started looking at a lot of things. We worked with our legislators during the legislative session, and we decided that what we needed to do was to create a visioning statement for the Southwest Water. And so I want to thank the county and WFRC. They were major contributors to the funding for this. And the six cities in the Southwest Water also contributed. Yesterday, the RFPs came in. There were four respondents. There's a technical committee that's going to review them. The steering committee will review them. Hopefully, on the 28th of this month, we'll be able to identify who that is and then be able to start this visioning study. They're going to take in the consideration, obviously, the regional transportation plan, the recent overview plan that the county did. They want to take a look at transportation, housing, economic development, everything in that Southwest Quadrant. We all recognize that that's where the major land, empty land is in Salt Lake County. And there's just a huge amount of pressure coming from the legislator and others that high-density housing needs to be placed in there. So the cities in this quadrant are very concerned about making sure that we try to do things the best possible way that we can, recognizing that they're coming, that they are going to be affecting everybody. But we want to be as smart and wise about this as we can. So real quickly, that hopefully I didn't go over my 1.5 minutes. But
no, that's great. I look forward to seeing what comes out of that, because that's going to be good for your communities. Andrea Olson, we have several items for UDOT. We're going to talk about the I-15 statewide, the Mountain View Corridor, and the West Davis Corridor.
Yes, and very quick in negative time. I'm going to do them in a different order. West Davis Corridor, we are currently doing mostly utility coordination work, anticipating releasing a design build RFP in 2020, starting construction in January of 2020, starting construction later that year, expected to go through 2024. And the scope is now to go four lanes to SR-93, and it also includes some Antelope Drive widening and the extension of SR-193 out to West Davis Corridor. Mountain View Corridor, we are starting construction on the phase from 4100 South to SR-201. And this is still phase one construction, which, you know, according to the environmental document, is doing those outer lanes first, and then we will work our way in as demand dictates. But there are still two phases of it for phase one that are unfunded, and it's kind of the north and south end. 2100 North in Lehigh to Porter Rockwell Boulevard and SR-201 to I-80 are yet unfunded. And then, as Roger mentioned, we're doing a reevaluation of the transit service that was part of the agreement that comes between phase one, building a phase one and building a phase two. And then I-15 is the one, it's an I-15 study from the Arizona border to the Idaho border. This one is murky at best. I think we are still trying to figure out the scope of that. what exactly that looks like. But I know for the urbanized areas, you know, Ted brought up the Wasatch Front Central Corridor study, which was done a couple years ago. And one of the things that we really want to come out of this, the I-15 study for the urbanized areas, is to figure out how to implement that and what the specific implementation pieces are and how that goes to the environmental process and things like that. And then looking at inconsistencies in the cross-section through the region. So we are just starting to develop the scope and schedule for that, and I'm happy to come back to the group and talk in more detail about that when we have it.
All right, thank you.
Congratulations, Andrea. Andrea was just made the director of planning for UDOT. We've known and been friends with Andrea for a long time, but congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Congratulations. All right, so we will now go. We have pre-UTA projects as well that we can split this between, I want to call you Mayor Beth Holbrook and Laura Townsend with UTA. We have the Point of the Mountain Transit, the Ogden Weaver State Bus Rapid Transit, and the Mid-Valley Bus Rapid Transit.
So with the Ogden BRT, all of the local funding has been completed, and it is actually in the phase where it's with the federal government. They've submitted their no findings. So everything is going along now. It's just a matter of how can we get that final piece, which is the federal funding component. That it's been highlighted from the federal government, so we're thankful that it's at this phase, but it has not yet been identified as receiving funding. That project is actually from our Ogden Front Runner Station all the way up 25th Harrison and then to Weaver State and around and back. It's this close, which is great. And then the next one is the Point of the Mountain study. That is actually in an alternatives analysis study. The local options are two ways. One of them is on the east side of I-15, the other is on the west side of I-15. Sorry, I'm trying to be really super brief, so just hitting all the high notes. But that analysis is actually going to be started fairly soon. We don't have all the funding to it. We have maybe 80%, but we're trying to get all of that taken care of so that we can do that study for this area as requested by those communities there. And then the Mid-Valley. So the Mid-Valley BRT, I'll probably have Laura maybe chime in on this one because she probably knows more about this than this one. I know that we've identified it and we're about 30% of the work is done. I think the environmental is almost completed. Do you want to finish on that?
Yeah, I think your summary is right. Yeah, we're finishing up the environmental analysis, and so the next steps really are seeking some additional funding for both capital and operations. That's always a key thing when you're thinking about transit is, okay, once it's built, that's not the end of the project. You need to operate it as well. So, we're moving forward on that, and I believe it's a phase one project in the RCP. And then on the Point of the Mountain, you'll notice in the RCP that we just recommended approval, both alignments on the west and the east are included in that planning document just to anticipate an outcome and recommendation from the RCP. Two other things that I might add really quickly, too. We are about to break ground on our Depot District bus, clean fuel bus garage. You'll notice in the RCP there's a really major focus on bus service. So that's kind of our next big effort there, and that garage is really needed. And also, we're increasingly participating in discussions about serving the Wasatch Canyon's recreational service as well. So.
Thank you. So our last item is the Davis Salt Lake Connector. Laura, you might want to chime in along with Mayor Arden.
So this is a project I think you've been working on for probably 20 years now. And I think we're just about getting ready to go. I think if you look at the bus transit or the ridership in South Davis County, it's a little bit disappointing. Probably because we're so close. But I think with this, we're certainly building the densities now in the county, and so we're looking forward to this. And Laura, I'll turn you a little bit more of the specifics on how it's going. So.
Yeah, similar situation. We're in the process for
selecting a consultant to do the environmental study on that. That will bring us to about 30% design, and then the next steps there are, again, seeking additional funding for both capital and operations, and designing and operating. So, yeah, we're looking forward to that. I think the Ogden BRT was a really great example of how both the Mid-Valley and South Davis are going to come together, where it's a combination of federal grants, local funding, county funding, even some private investments as well. And so I think, you know, all of these projects are really going to take a combination of resources to make it happen. So.
Thank you. All right, so that brings us to our final item, which is other business. We have some upcoming events that everyone should be aware of. We have our Utah Land Use Institute that was mentioned earlier, What Now? Practical Workshops on the 2019 legislation. That will be Saturday. That's always a good time. Make sure you get to one of those, if not this one, the next one. Then we have the Utah Economic Summit. That is tomorrow. And then we have AASHTO, I am not going to pronounce that.
ASHTO.
Spring meeting in Park City, May 20th to the 23rd. And then, for those of you who don't know, parking validations at the front desk. And our next meeting will be after the end of the busy summer season, so we will see everyone back here August 15th, 2019. I will entertain a motion. We have a motion to adjourn. All in favor?
Chairman, who were they that made the motion? I can't see their names.
Thank you. This is so.
My mayor, my mayor.
Yeah. Girl power. Yes. My mayor. It was so much.